Yes, hello folks, welcome to the weekly Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Phil Brown. I hope this reaches you well wherever you are in the world. It's Wednesday afternoon here in LA. We're a few hours out from the Mason Greenwood statement that Manchester United released earlier. I'll obviously cover that in this podcast, give my reaction to that, and then a few other things related to that topic. I will gloss over some of the things that happened in the Wolves game. I don't want to drag it back up again. And the national media are doing that job for me. On a day that the women qualified for the World Cup, it appears the most important topic on everyone's lips is the was it a penalty, was it not a penalty? This is obviously of major national importance that people like David James have brought onto national TV to give their opinion on this. And add to the public way of discussion and make sure that we're all aware that United got away with something and were beneficiaries of a controversial decision. I know the football club goes through this level of scrutiny, of course. It's easy to forget that this happens every single week because you don't hear about it. Weirdly enough, I haven't heard anything about the penalty in the Luton game, Brighton game, which was extremely controversial, that Brighton got. It's almost like it didn't happen. Surely if this is something you care about being correct, rather than who is the beneficiary, you would give that equal coverage, but apparently not. But we know this. I'm surprised they haven't asked Gabby Bonlahor what his thoughts are, because the whole world's waiting to hear what Gabby Bonlahor thinks, or do we probably already know. Obviously, like I said, I'll talk about the whole Mason Greenwood thing here. Not an easy thing to talk about, and I've been reluctant to talk about it before, but we're forced to talk about it now because of the total car crash and the way this has been handled by Manchester United. Talk a bit about the fact Mario Maguire moved to West Ham stalled. I'll give my views on that. Some other topics, Spurs away, of course. And to make an announcement on this podcast that this will probably, I'm sure you're glad to hear this, be the last podcast I record by myself. As most of you know, I've been recording this podcast with Colin. And Colin, unfortunately, due to his own work commitments with the iFilm, he's doing exceptionally well. He's traveling the world for boxing. And I love seeing that. I love seeing people go on and be successful. It's made it difficult for us to get corresponding schedules to get this podcast out. So if I wasn't recording it by myself, there wouldn't be one at all. I'm sure you're going to be glad to hear that this will be the last one I'll be doing by myself. So there's going to be a new podcast starting next week. I'm really looking forward to that. We'll put something out later on in the week once I agree with the other individual on how we're going to announce that. It'll still be available on this platform for now. That may change going forward at some point in the future, but I'll get plenty of notice on that. And we're really excited about this because we didn't want to just put out another Manchester United podcast with the millions that are already out there. We wanted to be something different. And the individual I'm going to be doing this with is exceptionally well informed. And we're going to make sure these podcasts are packed with information on things that are going on at Manchester United that aren't widely disseminated on social media or being aggregated by other accounts or, you know, that we're pulling from other places. So this is a podcast that we hope is informative on issues that other podcasts don't. I'm not knocking anyone else. Everyone else is good at what they do. They have their strengths. This is just something that we feel we can bring to the table and give an informed podcast each week with news and information because we're in some of my privileged positions, this individual that I'm going to be doing this with is in a much more privileged position than me to get information. We hope it's something that you enjoy. We hope it's something that's worthwhile, and we earn a spot on your iPod or your Google phone or whatever it is you're listening to this podcast on. I know lots of people competing for your attention and your time, so I appreciate the time you give me, and hopefully this new podcast that will start next week is also worthy of your time. So we look forward to your feedback on that. We're still finalizing one or two little things on how we're going to broadcast it and Is there going to be video? Is it all going to be audio? What platforms? All that? Because we both have our own platforms right now. Do we create a new platform? All that, all those things you can imagine are being discussed. But we're almost there. We've got a broad agreement on most issues. So I'm excited to be able to bring you that very shortly. Quickly, like I said about the Wolves game, it was a really poor performance. And I said this on Twitter, that Ten Hag needs to take responsibility for that. And I'll tell you why. I felt that United were physically unprepared for that game. They looked unfit to me. There was numerous times where they turned over possession and weren't able to get back, were jogging back. I don't believe that was a result of, you know, a lack of passion or intensity. I just think it was a lack of fitness, which is surprising to me. I would imagine that those were one of the things that Ten Hag would be very thorough about. They were physically knocked off the ball almost every time. I was surprised at that. Wolves had the most shots of a visiting team since 2005. If that stat's not right, I'm going to sack my style. Well, I'm certain that is. You know, gave the ball away 81 times in that game, which is just unbelievable. 81 times is the type of stat you see from a team that's never played together, and that's what they look like. They look like a team at the start of their preseason that hadn't played together. There was no tempo, you know, misplaced passes, you know, misplaced shots, you know, tripping over the ball, you know, poor first touch, all the things, the sloppy things you see when someone has a bit of ring rust and hasn't played in a while. That lineup had never been played once in pre-season. That was a surprise. So, United got out of jail. No question about it. They got lucky with the penalty. I believe it was a penalty. I've said that on Twitter. I don't understand the reaction to it. Or maybe I do because it's United, of course. I know all fans think that their team gets picked on. But this is undeniable when it comes to United. And it's not without consequence either. You know, the PGMOL apologised quickly. Certainly, I don't remember United getting any apologies on some blatant stonewall penalties. Maybe they did. You know, I also really see they were stepped down very, very quickly too, almost immediately. first game of the season. And of course, this is a national crisis, as it always is. So what I said before, you know, if you remember going back to the City goal, when United played City in the derby, and that first goal, it was played ad nauseum for a week. Everybody had a word to say. And what was the consequence? Every 50-50 decision went against United for months. Because referees are human too. They don't want to get stepped down. There's no question about this. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a fact. The consequence for denying United a 50-50 or making having United on the wrong end of a controversial decision is not the same as making sure United benefit from one. No one cares if you rob United. Nobody cares. It never results in a referee being stepped down. Never results in any of that. But if you do it the other way, where United benefit from it, then you have everyone who's not United fan screaming. And through audience capture and everything else, you get all these talking heads playing into that. You get the clickbait media that want to drive engagement. They do it two ways. They want to enrage United fans because there's many of them. And they want to play to the gallery of the other fans that aren't United fans by putting out this endless commentary, which is, you know, totally insane. Of course, no one else gets this type of scrutiny. As I was saying, there was a clear penalty, wrong decision in the Brighton-Luton game. Two penalties maybe in that game should have been given. If you didn't see the game, you probably didn't know. There was also a pretty first shot for a penalty against Wolves, doesn't match it. I mean, how long have we heard about Wayne Rooney getting the penalty against Arsenal? the end of the Invincibles. We heard this for 20 something years. And it was so pervasive that what got edited out of that game was that Ashley Cole absolutely cleaned Cristiano Ronaldo in the box. And a penalty wasn't given. Blatant penalty wasn't given. So, you know, these types of things happen, and sometimes you benefit from them, sometimes you don't. But United had three penalties given to them last season. That means they were joint last for the amount of penalties they were given. City had more than three times the number of penalties United got last season, more than three times. Now, City spent a lot of time attacking, but so too did United. They had one penalty given away from home the whole season. One. You can't tell me that is commensurate with probability. You can't tell me that there's not a reticence amongst referees when there's a 50-50 decision whether they're going, I don't want the grief. It's better not to give it. Of course that's the case. We all remember what happened when Jurgen Klopp came out and complained about VAR. And of course, Solskjaer mentioned it and said we didn't get a decision for months after. They didn't. I don't want to sit here and moan and complain, but that's a fact. And I've said this before, United will pay for this for months, and they will, be in no doubt. But that being said, there was plenty in that performance that was really, really concerning. There's the obvious issue between Mason Mount and Bruno Fernandes, and how do they play in the same midfield? Similar discussions that happened when United signed Bruno Fernandes. And the question mark was, how could he play in the same midfield with Pogba? With one holding midfielder, that's a problem. And you could see, you know, the fullbacks were supposed to tuck in and help Casemiro. But United were still massively exposed down the middle. And this is a big problem. Casemiro's first game of the season, but that was the first time I looked at him, I saw a 31-year-old. Well, didn't look that mobile. Not his fault, to be fair. You know, I don't care if you're a midfielder in your prime, if you're left exposed like that, you're going to look bad. But what kind of concerned me was he again also didn't look fit. There was a moment where Wolves broke, second half. Casemiro runs into the Wolves player, I can't remember who it was, if it was Cunha or something, and didn't have the physical strength to push him off and close the ball down. He just looked completely shot. And I'm surprised that a Ten Hag United doing that. They're going to have to be much better against Spurs away this weekend. And they can't have a repeat of that. Okay, fine if you have a balance issue in midfield, but some of the things that concerned me were intangibles. Fitness, conditioning, strength, all that. Really, really poor. And to be honest, United should have lost that game. It's great that they won, not playing well, but I believe Ten Hag needs to look at that game like it was a defeat. Because the signs have been there. And I said this before on this podcast, where I said, okay, yeah, preseason results aren't the most important thing, but it'd be wrong to say they don't matter, especially the closer you get to a season, because that's the only barometer you have of where you're at. If you're constantly losing games in preseason, you can't turn around and say it's not important. That's a concern. It's not important in terms of consequence, or in terms of qualifying for competitions and what have you. But certainly a concern that it's an illustration that you're not ready to start a season, and United did not look ready to start that season. They got lucky. A better team than Wolves, that would have been an embarrassment. And when we talk about how we're going to judge Ten Hag this season, he has to improve on last season. That's the only way you could call this season a success. What does that even look like to me? That looks like United have to be within touching distance. Even if they don't win the league, they'll have to be within a respectable distance. I'm talking 5-6 points of City by April, assuming City are top of the league. interesting to see how they deal with the De Bruyne injury. But assuming whoever the leaders are, United have to be within a reasonable touching distance of them, based on the assumption that they don't get a massive amount of injuries or any unforeseen variables, right? So they have to be within touching distance of them. So they have to win, for me, a trophy bigger than the Carabao. So you're talking FA Cup. They cannot repeat ever again what happened at the Etihad and what happened at Anfield. Yeah, it's two biggest rivals. They conceded 13 goals in those games. That absolutely cannot happen. That, I mean, if you're going to lose the game, fine. But you have to be competitive. You can't be shipping 6-7 goals. That's a serious, serious problem. So that has to never happen again. I don't ever want to feel that again. Lose a game, I can deal with. But getting absolutely annihilated is demoralizing. And there's no way that should ever be happening again in a Ten Hag team. There would be no excuse for that in your second season. I think Ten Hag has been magnificent. He hasn't put a foot wrong, in my opinion. You know, 99.9% of the decisions he's got right. One decision that he still has to prove he got right is the Antony decision. He will have to back his manager this summer or this season and show that he was right to spend all that money on him. Because that's money United definitely could have used elsewhere. I mean, Antony cost what Harry Kane cost Bayern Munich. So it's really, really important. And I think Antony's an exceptional player. I think he's very talented, but he has to affect games. He has to be scoring. He has to be creating. You know, not just beating the player on the halfway line. You know, a lovely piece of skill on the halfway line. You know, he has to be affecting games. So I need to see that from him this season. And for me, I think to be calling Antony a successful season, we have to be looking at double figures and goals. You should expect that from your winger. You know, Spurs get that from Son. You know, Liverpool are getting that from Jota, from Diaz, or whoever plays out wide. You know, Arsenal are getting that from Saka. You know, these are the types of numbers you have to do. You know, United are obviously getting that from Rashford, so there's no reason why he shouldn't be doing that. There's no excuse for that this season. Also similar on assists now that United have a number 9. So I would expect much, much better from him this season. The other thing I think that Ten Hag has to do is get to at least the quarterfinal of the Champions League. If Inter Milan and AC Milan can compete in the semi-final, there's no reason why Ten Hag can't get to a quarterfinal. You take a look at the money that Ten Hag has spent this summer and last summer. I think it's bare minimum expectation that 2 years in your second season, that you are a competitive team in the Champions League. You don't have to win it. But quarterfinal, I think, is bare minimum. I think less than that would be a major disappointment. So those are the things I'm looking for this season to improve. I still feel United are slight bit short in the transfer market. You know, when I was watching that game against Wolves, I'm like, there's the difference between this season and last season is there's one outfield player, Mason Mount. Obviously, Rasmus Højlund's injured. And of course, Onana is an exceptional goalkeeper. I'm very encouraged by him. But one outfield player, I don't think, is enough. Especially when you consider that the squad was thin as it was. And United have already lost a couple. So I think they still need more. Whether they get more or not, that's another thing. But I still think they need at least one more midfielder. And of course, the striking situation we'll get to when we talked about Mason Greenwood in a second. So I think for United, they might still need to sell McTominay to get a midfielder. You know, the Fred deal is interesting because United didn't get a tremendous amount of money for Fred. And I need to get authorization to explain why from this individual that gave me this. But they didn't get as much as they advertised for, not that the fee wasn't correct, but how much United got and how much Fred got is not been declared. So I don't think the sale of Fred is enough for United to fund a midfielder, which they need. They were offered Tchouaméni, but he's also been offered to Liverpool. I think I mentioned this on last week's podcast. If Real Madrid were open to a loan option to buy, and I think United would go after that deal, where they could push it off to next season. If they could sell McTominay for 40 million, it would significantly increase their budget and ability to move. And I think they would look beyond Amrabat. Saw some rumours earlier, Amrabat's on his way to Liverpool. I don't know if that's true or not. I really hope it isn't, because I think he'd be a fantastic signing for them. But we'll see what happens there. I think United still need another midfielder, and I think Ten Hag still wants another midfielder. There's obviously the situation with Harry Maguire. You know, and to be measured in how I say this, as I've said before, and he's not the first player. We've seen this with Jesse Lingard. You know, Jesse Lingard took horrendous abuse. This is something that is a consequence of social media, where social media is changing our culture and how we deal with dissent and how we deal with, you know, there's so many more platforms now to amplify hate, amplify anger, and to express that anger. Where in the past you'd maybe vent to your mates, it's now everywhere. I found the booing of Maguire in the US really off-putting. It actually made me angry. There's a guy behind me in the Dortmund game, not just booing him, but shouting some disgusting things about Harry Maguire, and I wanted to say something so bad, because I think there's a line. And I know he was booed partially in Ireland too, and this is something that's crept into United's, you know, fan base over the last 6-7 years, I suppose. Pogba took some grief too, and criticism is fine, it comes with the territory, but I think there's a line, and that line always gets crossed, especially on social media when people start getting personal. A lot of fans were disappointed that Harry Maguire didn't go, and I'll be honest, I was one of them. For reasons I've already said in this podcast, I don't think Harry Maguire can play in a Ten Hag system in the same way David De Gea couldn't play in a Ten Hag system, and Lukaku couldn't play in an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer system, and he really should go. I think he brings a nervousness to United's defending. I think his confidence is on the floor. And I really don't understand why someone would prioritise money, wages, over their career. Because let's have it right, that's what Maguire is doing. I mean, Ten Hag couldn't make it more obvious that he wants him to go. I mean, he stripped him of the captaincy. Up until Martinez got injured, Maguire started 4 Premier League games all season, and 2 of those were against Brighton and Brentford. So after the first 2 games of the season, after that Brentford game, he started 2 more games. And as I said, he lost the captaincy. They're bringing in Johnny Evans. He's always the last defender to come on the field. They've accepted offers for him. I mean, they're doing everything to let him know that they don't want him there. I think part of it was to get Maguire to put in a transfer request, and had he have done that, he would have forsaken a lot of the bonuses that he's asking for. I think United were hoping he would do that, trying to force his hand into doing that. And I think he knew that, which is why he didn't. The anger really should be directed towards the Glazers and Ed Woodward. Because everywhere you look, the incompetence is gone. And it's infuriating. Think about if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer got the players he wanted. Haaland, Bellingham, Caicedo. You know, 2 young midfielders that have gone for 100+ million this summer. That United, that Solskjaer both wanted, that Woodward couldn't get over the line. Haaland, the best young striker in the world. We'd be having a totally different conversation right now about Manchester United. Okay, said over 4.5 million now goes for a, breaks the British transfer record. Rank and aptitude. David De Gea on a contract of 350 grand a week. Why? Who else was going to pay David De Gea 350 grand a week? Why did you need to pay him that? Harry Maguire gets a 6-year contract. Why? You know, even Fred, Eric Bailly. Why was Bailly given a new contract when it was blatantly obvious? Did he had nothing left to contribute to the football club? I mean, it's just staggering rank incompetence. It's a disgrace. It's almost a borderline criminal that should be investigated. And I say that as someone that I quite like Ed as a human being. People, I've separated what he's done at United. I've spoke to him numerous times outside of the football club, and he's quite a reasonable human being to speak to. But his record at United is a disgrace. Totally shambolic. But again, why was this allowed to happen? Where was the control parameters from the Glazers? Where was the oversight from the Glazers that said this is totally unacceptable? You know, why was this allowed to continue for so long? This, of course, is a major prohibitive obstacle for Ten Hag to rebuild his team, because he can't get these players out. They're stuck with players that have nothing to contribute. They're blocking replacements. So it's double-edged sword. So you're not just stuck with players you can't use and don't want and have no interest in giving you 100% or rehabilitating their career, but you can't bring in the players that you want. So this doesn't happen in other clubs. You know, Pep Guardiola can come in and say, I want 4 new fullbacks after his first season and get, or 4 new defenders after his first season and get them, no matter what contracts the previous ones are on, City will take the hit and get rid of them. So United can't do that. And the legacy that has been left behind from the previous rank incompetence of Ed Woodward is one that's going to be felt for quite a while, and most likely will be the biggest prohibitive factor in United challenging for a league title this summer, this season. Because be in no doubt, if Ten Hag was given the money, how many of those players wouldn't be there? Scott McTominay wouldn't be there if he had a choice. Harry Maguire wouldn't be there if he had a choice. These are players Ten Hag's going to have to rely on. And these players know this. There'd be a different centre-back brought in. There'd be another striker brought in. There'd be other players in key positions that wouldn't be there. Maybe Jadon Sancho would be for the chop. The squad would look very different. As I'm sure, to be fair, a lot of squads would if managers had a blank checkbook. But these are players that Ten Hag doesn't trust. And the players know this. Which brings me to Mason Greenwood. Speaking of rank incompetence. Now, as I said before, I've been reluctant to talk about this on this podcast for the obvious reason. It's a deeply sensitive issue. And as I said before, where you stand on an issue all depends on where you're sitting. Mason, as has been covered in other outlets, it's been well known in United circles that the United Football Department have wanted Mason back for a while. And anyone who has any remote connections inside the football club knew about this. I've known about it for a while. And if United were going to sack him, they would have already. But they made multiple mistakes in this process. One, by teasing an announcement, which was just pure insanity. We're going to make an announcement before the season. I was told that back in July, that they were going to make an announcement back, and I'm talking about the start of July, by someone inside the club, that they were going to announce it before the start of the season, which to me was madness, because you don't tell people when you're going to make an announcement on something like that, you just do it. Because once you tease it, you make it a focal point. You make it a point of discussion on social media. And it gets relitigated all over again. And when you leave a vacuum, it won't get filled charitably. So inevitably, you're going to have people slaughtering the club. You're going to have people slaughtering sponsors. You're going to have people slaughtering the women's team. All that stuff. They take abuse that don't need to take it. You force them into taking positions they didn't want to take. And you somehow make the situation worse. Jimmy Jackson put out a story the other day saying that the women's team were going to be asked. United tried to come out and counteract that story by saying they weren't going to be asked, they were going to be told. In that Jimmy Jackson story, there was two female United players that aren't even at the club anymore. In the Athletic story today, which is exceptionally well sourced, as it always is, from the excellent Laurie Whitwell, one of the best United journalists around, saying Richard Arnold had a meeting with United staff on August 4th. I'm told that by an exceptional source that that definitely happened. What's inexplicable to me is how United have allowed that to happen and not be aware that not have a reasonable expectation that once we tell these staff, this is going to get leaked. I mean, how does anyone not have a strategy, a club this size going, okay, the minute we inform people outside of this room, we have to expect that this is going to be leaked. So let's make sure we get in front of this and we make a statement. Because now it just looks like they're afraid to say what they're thinking. Now it just looks like they're afraid to admit they want to bring him back. And it's made it so much worse. As people have said, you know, Ten Hag, John Murdoch, what have you, gave their approval to Mason Greenwood being brought back. Well, Erik ten Hag expected Mason Greenwood to be part of his team at this point. And now he's putting pressure on United, saying if you don't bring him back, because he has to be registered by September 1st, if you don't bring him back, I need another striker. This wasn't part of the plan. He was supposed to play in that under-21 game against Everton on Tuesday. And it just looks like United are petrified to make the decision. I've talked about the legal challenges I'm sure United would face with sacking him when technically he hasn't been convicted of a crime. Also, I'm not going to name names. He's not the only player at United that's an accused rapist. It seems to escape people's gaze. For some reason, there's another player at United this summer who could get who could stay very easily. That's an accused rapist. So for me, I think this is something that needs to be put to bed immediately. United need to have the courage to come out, make the announcement, whatever their decision is, and deal with it. Because it's the worst kept secret in football. And leaving this in limbo just leaves other people to be, you know, to be attacked. And like I said before in this podcast, when Adidas came out and said we hadn't been asked or consulted, there was a major indication right there that what United's decision was they were going to keep Mason Greenwood because they didn't want responsibility. They want to be accused of giving consent for Mason Greenwood to stay. If he was going to be sacked, they wouldn't have said anything. It's just completely and utterly ridiculous. It's amazing to me that they have somehow made this decision worse, this situation worse. And it should have been handled by now. And the distraction is completely unnecessary. It needs to be dealt with and just move on. This has other ramifications, like I said. Ten Hag wants another striker. And honestly, I feel that the finances will dictate the decision here. Choose my words really carefully here. Like I said, the legal issues of sacking somebody that hasn't been convicted of a crime aren't straightforward. I'm sure there would be a high potential for an unfair dismissal if that happened. And all sorts of accusatory issues, like how do you give Ronaldo a contract in that Mason Greenwood? I'm sure you could easily look at, you know, other grounds of discrimination, what have you. If you're willing to give Ronaldo a contract and it wasn't grounds for dismissal for him, and it didn't violate club policy. And let's be honest, when you look at Ronaldo's deposition, it's pretty bad. I mean, there's an admission of guilt in that deposition of sodomy, forced sodomy. It's pretty horrendous. I'm not defending Mason Greenwood by any means. Please don't say that. I think that I'm just saying that I would imagine from his legal aspect, from his legal team, they'd be looking at things like that and saying, you know, we have to have equivalency of outcome when it comes to how the club litigate these issues. So I don't think legally it would be very easy if you needed to actually sack him on any legal grounds. It would have to be a mutual termination type thing. And just like Harry Maguire and just like other players at United, they're reluctant to terminate contracts out by, you know, and walk away from millions of pounds. Well, I understand that. So, not an easy situation for United to deal with at all. But it needs to be handled. Spurs away this weekend. Very difficult game. I watched their game against Brentford. They're missing a striker, of course. I really hope they do not sign Evan Ferguson. Evan Ferguson looked fantastic when he came on against Brighton. I think if he has a really good season this season where he hits 30 goals, plays exceptionally well, you're talking about a kid that will break Caicedo's record next summer in transfer fee. A kid that grew up supporting United that I would love to see at Manchester United. Not because of where he's from, but because he's an exceptional talent and I think he would be tailor-made for a club like United. So be interesting to see what Ange Postecoglou does there. It's a difficult game away. I think if United took a point in that game, it wouldn't be a disaster. It's a rejuvenated Tottenham, obviously. Some of the old problems are still there. Defensively, they're not great. United weren't great away from home last season, so they're going to have to fix that problem against Spurs. I mean, this is one of the things they must improve on this season. So, but I would still think that a draw away at White Hart Lane, or sorry, at Spurs, what's the name of the stadium actually? I actually don't know. I think a draw away at Tottenham isn't the worst result in the world. So, especially second game of the season, you know, they're still flying a bit off, you know, Postecoglou and all that, and United still don't look great. So I wouldn't be devastated with the draw. United have some difficult games, even that Arsenal away game. You know, if you don't lose the Spurs away, you don't lose the Arsenal away, if you take points there, that to me isn't where you lose the league or you lose top four. It's when you draw away to bad teams, lose away to bad teams that you should be beating. You know, if you take a point at Spurs, take a point at Arsenal, those are two good points for me. So I think you'd have to be much, much better in every single metric. Like I said, Ten Hag is not above criticism. He hasn't, in my opinion, put a foot wrong. I think he's raised the standards all throughout the football club. But he's not without fault. And this is where he is going to find himself under pressure, because second season, there's a reasonable expectation of improvement. This is his team. And he is partially responsible for the poor performance on Monday. United should have been better prepared for that. He'll have to get it right this weekend. He's obviously someone that knows how to set up a football team, how to prepare a football team. And, you know, in some ways, that performance against Wolves reminded me a bit against Brighton, in the sense that Ten Hag was trying to, he had to adapt his tactics after Brentford to the team that he had, because he realised he couldn't play that way. I wonder if he'll have to do the same again and realise that with the players that he has, they can't play exactly the way he wants them to play. Like, he can't play Mason Mount and Bruno Fernandes that high above the ball. One of those two is going to have to drop deep. Neither of them want to defend. So how do you, unless you have a midfield four, you have somebody sitting beside Casemiro, but then you lose a winger. Now, I know he wants to tuck in those fullbacks so that they help Casemiro out when you turn the ball over. But that's dangerous too, because you can easily get picked off down the wings with balls over the top, with fast wingers. And Spurs are really good with. So, it's going to be a difficult game. One thing that they can't do is lose the game. If they lose that game, and I still feel that morale and say that United team is still a bit fragile. I still don't think if they lost, it would provoke United into a reaction in the transfer market. We'll see what happens. Lastly, on a takeover, there was an interesting comment from Cardiff City chairman that came out with a quite specific statement. It was 7.2 billion sale of Manchester United that was going to be announced. There were some people dismissed it, saying he was just lifting that stuff off social media, what have you. I don't know if he was or he wasn't, but I would be surprised if he was. I mean, guys like me have been getting information from financial circles since last August. And I'm just a scroat. So why would a guy who was a broker, from what I understand, for the Glazers in their initial takeover of Manchester United, and who clearly moves in financial circles, not be informed? I mean, some major media outlets have run stories on United being sold and a sale around the corner, like Reuters. You know, Reuters business are not running that story without it being exceptionally well sourced. Bloomberg, other newspapers, other high-end periodicals, newspapers that aren't tabloid-driven, that aren't clickbait-driven, that are about informing the financial community, and don't do speculation. And the reason why they're doing that, running with confidence, is because this has been a discussion inside US financial circles for quite a while, for the last few months. I tweeted on April 28th the number 7 billion, because I was told by an exceptional source who informed me, by the way, United were for sale July, and I ignored his message, July of 2022. And he came back to me again in August, and then I started to listen, because he wasn't the only person telling me this. This individual has never been wrong about anything. Told me that the Qataris were willing to go to 7 billion. And I didn't ask if that was dollars or pounds. I mentioned that at the time. I would imagine it's dollars. So this is not a massive surprise if that was to happen. Like I said before, the reasons why the Glazers put the club on the market still exist. None of those have been addressed adequately. United still need money. They're still suffocating in debt. There's a lot of things that need to be paid over the next couple of years. The bonds mature. They get another year. So it's not a football club that's cash rich. It has a low cash balance. And it has real problems paying dividends to the family. They have no interest in keeping hold of an asset that's not enriching them. It's difficult to get consensus among six people with different views. This is, of course, the legacy of their father, who left it in the six kids' name, who have no interest in the football club. But one way or another, this stuff will have to get addressed. It'll have to get answered. And what I mean by that is the financial aspects of this. United are still in a situation where they need money. Stadium rebuild still needs to be done. Investment in infrastructure still needs to be done. All that stuff. And United can no longer finance that on the revenue and turnover. There's still issues with the main shirt sponsor that's still one out. United have not been able to replace them for a reason. And I would imagine that is factored into their thought process with Mason Greenwood. I think ideally the Glazers would have preferred to finance a sale and then deal with the Mason Greenwood issue. I think that's why they kicked the can down the road back in January, February, up until when the charges were dropped in February till the summer. and prefer to make it someone else's problem. And they're aware that this could also have a negative effect on sponsors, sponsors they can't afford to lose. So it's not so easy to replace them. When you have a fan base that attacks any commercial partner, and they would have to disclose that in negotiations with a commercial partner, who most likely aren't United fans, could sponsor any football club in the world. United would be forced to tell them, hey, when you sponsor us, you're probably going to get attacked by our fans online. The first question I would ask if I'm writing a big check is, why would I do that? Why would I partner with you when you have no brand equity? When you have no fan equity? Nothing. What's the point? It's supposed to be a brand association. Your customers, this is the whole point of me sponsoring you, is you're supposed to give me access to your customer base, your fan base, and they're supposed to want to buy my product because I'm sponsoring their football team. Negative association doesn't result in that. So, yeah, it's obviously a very sensitive issue, but again, this is something that will need to get addressed in the very near future. So all this talk about the Glazers aren't desperate to sell. If the Glazers weren't desperate to sell, the Glazers wouldn't put the football club on the market. And obviously, if you're a seller, you want the message out that you're not desperate to sell. So, you know, Teddy Sheringham saying that today, but saying it's like a house that you have, that you really love. Need to be offered stupid money for it. Well, what didn't factor in is that you can't afford the mortgage anymore. So sooner or later, something will have to give on that. We'll shall see. So once again, United making headlines for all the wrong reasons, and made a complete mess of this Mason Greenwood situation. Thank you to all of you who stuck by me through the summer. I listened to these 45-minute ramblings of me talking loquacious nonsense. Hopefully, with this new podcast next week, you don't have to listen to me as much, and it'll be much more informative. I'm really looking forward to this because I think this is something that will be a bit different to anything else that's out there. So we'll put something out later on in the week once we have everything set. So, adios. I hope you're all well. Take it easy, folks. And thanks for downloading the podcast. I hope you're doing well wherever you are in the world.